This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by AgriEdge from Syngenta for resourceful growers seeking to enhance productivity.
Hey, Chip, are you there, Chip? John Haney, how about you? Pam? Jim? Well, surely Davis Michelson's here. I said, surely Davis Michelson is here.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Tyson Redpath, Tim Brock, and Michelle Jones. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal Sport. And now, in for Chip, who's exploring his professional bobsledding options, Farm Journal's own Minister of Information, the Commandant of Commentary, the Overlord of Ovation, John Harris!
Wow, I am not sure what to make of that introduction.
Yes.
But Davis, you're like the designated survivor today, aren't you?
I am. I'm the last one on the island, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. Chip's out, Sean's out, Pam's out, Jim Wiesmeyer is out. They're all traveling. They've had busy weeks.
I know they have.
We've heard Chip at National Farm Machinery Show all week. Sean was there as well. Pam traveling the world as she usually does. And Jim Wiesmeyer is flying back from somewhere. So you've got the replacements today. But man, what a group of replacements we've got lined up.
Absolutely right. Tyson Redpath, Tim Brock, and Michelle Mybell Jones from Montana, right? Isn't Michelle out in Montana?
Out in Montana. Folks know her as Big Sky Farm Her on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And they've all been on the show before, but never all together here on the Friday Free-for-All. So it should be good. I've been getting emails from them all morning about some great stuff to talk about. So looking forward to the conversation this morning with you two, Davis Michelson.
Well, sure, yeah. All right. It's Valentine's Day, you know.
Oh, is it?
You got big plans? Big plans for the missus?
Should I have made big plans?
You should have made some plans.
Oh, no.
Don't tell me you got nothing.
We don't do a big Valentine's Day, though.
Okay.
Do you?
That's all right. Well, normally I don't, but I've got a big thing planned with my son for my wife tonight, and I've got a whole list of things to do, and this icky work day is just kind of feels like it's getting in my way. It's very inconvenient for me.
That is inconvenient. All right, well, let's clear that. Well, let's start with the news. What have you got for us today, Davis?
Sure thing. Well, not only Valentine's Day, today is implementation day for the Phase 1 trade accord signed with China. While the coronavirus, and John, now it's called COVID-19, has raised concerns about the timing of proposed ag purchases by China, President Xi Jinping has assured President Trump personally that those commitments will be met. The trade deal itself includes provisions for regular meetings between officials from both sides. Meanwhile, the U.S. will cut tariffs on $120 billion in Chinese goods in half, with China reciprocating on $75 billion of U.S. goods, including cars, crude oil, and soybeans. Now, John, energy trade had been a centerpiece of the trade deal, and the U.S. was counting on China making $50 billion in additional oil and natural gas purchases over the next 2 years. Foreign policy experts believe that number is unrealistic. What do you think?
Well, again, with nobody traveling right now, that's going to make it even more unrealistic.
Right.
But certainly, U.S. ethanol producers, both for the ethanol and DDGs, were really hoping to open up that market and provide some market incentive for that industry.
Well, the U.S. has officially charged Chinese telecom giant Huawei with racketeering and conspiracy to steal trade secrets in a federal indictment. The Justice Department accused Huawei and two of its subsidiaries of a pattern of racketeering activity and stealing information from six U.S. companies, including manuals for wireless technology and source code dating back as far as 1999. The Trump administration has called Huawei a national security threat as it builds 5G wireless networks around the world. John, do you know what we're talking about here when we're talking about stealing source code? Can you enlighten us?
Well, yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's the code that drives these networks that Huawei is trying to bid up to build out 5G across the country, and the code that is behind those networks.
Well, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, says he thinks President Trump should follow the suggestion of Attorney General William Barr and refrain from tweeting about pending Justice Department business.
Good luck with that.
In an interview with ABC News earlier, Barr said the president's public statements about the sentencing of Roger Stone was making his job impossible, adding, quote, I'm not going to be bullied or influenced by anybody. You know, and I don't know. There have been calls for Trump to please, for the love of God, stop tweeting. And then there's an argument that I can kind of understand to see, hey, we've got maybe some transparency going here with what the president is thinking that we haven't enjoyed in previous presidencies. I don't know, John, where do you fall on this?
And I can appreciate the insight into that, but when it comes to influencing the justice system, that certainly crosses a line. There should not be undue influence from the White House over the Justice Department.
But isn't the onus of that on the Justice Department not to be influenced by it?
But William Barr's point is it's hard to do that when there's the public perception driven by these tweets that the president is driving, whether that's the reality or not.
Right, right. Okay, very good. Well, let's end with this. The Senate has voted in favor of a measure limiting President Trump's ability to attack Iran. The resolution offered under the 1973 War Powers Act would require the president to immediately end hostilities with Iran and would require congressional approval for future aggression. The measure is expected to easily pass through the House, though most believe the president would veto the measure, noting the House and Senate likely lack the two-thirds vote needed to block such a veto. I mean, Iran's not going to do anything, are they? Is this situation in the bag already?
Who knows? I mean, that's been so volatile. Who knows what either side is going to do in that conflict?
Yeah, interesting. All right, over to you.
All right, thanks, Davis. We'll chat with you a little bit more in the show, but let's turn now to Jennifer Scheich, who's the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, big news this week that World Pork Expo is back. What's involved in that announcement? Because last year we saw it largely canceled. There are still some events, but largely canceled because of concerns over African swine fever.
Yep. And, you know, this year the concerns with African swine fever are still there, but they've decided that they're going to up biosecurity. And because it's such an important event to the pork industry, not just in the U.S., but throughout the world, they've decided to host it again June 3rd through the 5th at the Iowa State Fairgrounds again. But they aren't going to have the live swine show there this year. They're going to relocate that. It was a negligible risk, they say, but they decided they would do that just to be sure. And they've also canceled some of the farm tours that they've historically offered just as another layer of biosecurity as well.
How far away are they relocating those live competitions, and will they be in the same time frame?
No, they'll be at different times. So the live show will take place June 7th through the 13th in Indianapolis at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. So, you know, they'll be spread out. But again, you know, I think it's that concern of continuing to have those safe travel guidelines when you're traveling from a foreign country that has tested positive for the disease. And I think it's important for us to make sure that we're really careful with our own biosecurity on our farms of who we let in and how we let people in, you know. And so I'm glad for the pork industry because it's something that they really missed last year, but it's something that we do need to still be cautious about.
And really an opportunity to highlight what the industry does to promote and defend biosecurity. So there are some opportunities built into this as well. Hey, Jennifer, so great talking with you today.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. It's Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. When we come back, it's the Friday free-for-all. Sounds a little different today, but should be very interesting. Tyson Redpath, Tim Burak, and Michelle Jones, me, John Harith, when we come back on AgriTalk.
Willis Jepson is a seventh-generation farmer along the Kentucky-Tennessee border. A few years ago, he enrolled in Syngenta's whole farm management program, AgriEdge. Willis, you call yourself a sort of technology junkie. You already collected a lot of data from your fields, but how has AgriEdge helped you take advantage of that?
You know, we manage zones that are anywhere from an acre to no more than maybe 7 or 8 acres in this 150-acre field. So that's allowed us to, instead of making broad blanket applications and spending money, we know for a fact that using the technology, we are saving product every time we make applications.
Thank you, Willis. That is Willis Jepson along the Kentucky-Tennessee border. You can find out more about AgriEdge by reaching out to your local Syngenta rep or heading to www.agriedge.com.
At Brandt, we're once again breaking ground on groundbreaking technology. It's called EndsUp, and it's a revolutionary product featuring new enzyme that helps prime the soil for success at planting by boosting enzyme activity and creating a rich environment around the seed. This function helps plants emerge quickly and come out strong, which gives the crop its best chance to face what Mother Nature has in store and can increase yield up to 15%. So don't break ground this season without the groundbreaking technology of EndsUp enzymes by Brandt. Find EndsUp at Brandt.co.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you were able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm John Harris, filling in for Chip Flory. Today we've got fill-ins all around except for our designated survivor, Davis Michelson. And Davis, as the designated survivor, you formed the new government, right?
That's right. That's right. And I miss Soundgarden.
Yeah, but
in fact, Spoon Man may be our new national anthem. if I'm put in charge of anything.
But I got to say, Producer Joe, not terribly Valentine's Day-y, if that's a word.
I think he's all right. I think he's all right.
You think he's all right? Okay.
Yeah. We used to be stuck on that painted black thing with the
yeah, that would definitely not fit
that
Valentine's
Day. That had to go.
Day.
Yeah, yeah.
And so far, no New York, so we're doing all right.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I'll try to make up for it in the next segment.
Yeah, thanks.
Attaboy.
All right, well, let's get to the Friday free-for-all, Davis. We got, as we mentioned in the first segment, everybody's off traveling today, so we've got, I'm not going to say the B team, because I think we may be better than the A team today, at least the rest of the folks involved in this. Let's start with Tim Burrock, farmer from Iowa, frequent guest on AgriTalk, and I think he's been on the free-for-all before. Welcome back, Tim.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Michelle Jones, and I got to tell you right now, take out your phone, open up the Twitter app, And if you're not already, follow at Big Sky Farm Her, one of the best Twitter accounts to follow, very insightful and very involved in the conversation about agriculture every day. Michelle, thanks for joining us again on AgriTalk.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, and Tyson Redpath, who is a D.C. lobbyist, has been on with us many times before, giving us the D.C. angle. Tyson, thanks again.
Hey, I'm just happy to be on the court, whether it's the A team or the B team. I just want to play.
All right. Well, let's start with you. We have phase one of the China deal officially being implemented today, but I think everybody is still sitting there staring, wondering when the needle is going to move from that phase one deal. Are you getting a sense, Tyson, are you hearing the same thing in D.C. that we're hearing out in the countryside about just this anxiousness about phase one building?
Well, sure, and the anxiousness, I think, is amplified by this novel coronavirus outbreak, and I emphasize novel, right? It's an outbreak of humanitarian and public health proportions that the likes of which maybe we haven't seen. So, you know, I think at the very least, and you heard from some administration officials this week, that it's going to delay China's ability to live up to the terms of the buying spree that was sort of set forth. You know, the encouraging signs, I think, are that Chinese officials have not yet sought to engage the provision in the agreement that allows for sort of a delay if there are acts of God and other market conditions that are unforeseen. So they have chosen not to sort of, you know, officially notify under the terms of that agreement that they will be delayed. But
they've got time, you know, to do that still.
Yeah. If you just look at what's happening in sort of the gasoline market, the oil markets, the drop off in consumption there, it's, you know, I think there's going to be a delay.
All right. Tim, what are you hearing in Iowa? Is that anxiety building?
The anxiety is building. I had a chance to listen to Craig Allen. He's the head of the U.S.-China Business Council. And he's saying that we think they're going to continue to fulfill their agreement, as Tyson just mentioned, the issues that are currently enveloping them. I, on the other hand, personally, I have real reservations because it's getting pushed back so long, and already we're getting almost to March, and nothing's happening. Today's the day. If we don't see some announcement where they finally tell us maybe what they're thinking, I have real concerns that it could be a real drag on us, and we're going to be in trouble financially as we wait for China to start buying all the surpluses that currently exist in the ag world.
Yeah, but Davis Michelson, it's not a complete bust so far. I think there's some, 25 ships with soybeans headed to China right now?
That's right. And, you know, it's hard to say how realistic, you know, what even a realistic expectation is at this point. And if they're willing to at least get started, I think that the trade might call that a win.
Well, but so far they're not, even with those ships that were previously announced, but they are actually moving now. Right. And I haven't looked this morning, but I know markets have been reluctant to move on that kind of news. Michelle in Montana.
Yes,
I
think it's...
Yeah, go ahead, Michelle.
I think that there's definitely a lot of concern. And I think more than even outside of our deal, I think there should be a lot of concern that, I mean, China's just not going to use anything, whether it comes from the U.S. and they're actually fulfilling that deal, or whether they're pulling out of South America and their harvest, just their general lack of consumption and the stress that's going to put on world stocks at the end of the year, I think should be a significant concern for, you know, a global environment that already has too many world stocks for a lot of commodities.
Yeah, but Michelle, if they are able to eventually get out of the cloud of coronavirus, won't there be a surge in consumption as they work to rebuild those stocks that have been, because they haven't been filling store shelves during this crisis that they're dealing with there?
There might be, yeah. It just may take, that might be true. Mostly be the concern, I think, is how long it takes them to get through that at the port, you know, where they haven't been working. They just turned boats around of, what was it, chicken and fresh foods. And send them to other countries because they can't handle them at their ports because there's no one working. I think that there's just going to be a lot of logistical bottlenecks to getting China up and running again.
All right, Tim, I hate to bring politics back to Iowa because I know you've just escaped that whole umbrella and barrage that you've had over there. But looking forward to November, if this uncertainty about phase one continues well into the fall, do you think that impacts the farmer vote or farmer turnout in the November election?
It will some. What we don't know today is who's running against Trump. But I tell you, I actually think it's going to be Bloomberg.
I think
he's going to pull off something that is going to be so unique in the history of politics. He's going to have figured out a way to buy his way into the system because I think the Democratic liberal establishment does not want to have Bernie on the ticket. And I think this is going to happen. And so how will farmers vote then? If it's really still tough going, there'll be a few switch, but there's sure a lot still loyal to Trump.
Tim,
it's a bit up in the air.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't believe that Bernie can pull the weight for the Democrats, why not? It seems like there's an awful lot of, well, and maybe I'm answering my own question here, an awful lot of youthful support for his idea of this democratic socialism, which, as Bernie says, isn't actual socialism. I've heard him explain that a couple of different ways. What makes Bernie falter at this point?
I don't think they want him on the ticket.
Uh-huh.
I think there's enough people that understand that if there's a chance to change presidents, that he's not the guy that'll get enough votes. Now, I understand the youth movement.
Yep.
That's the that what I call is where our education system is today, and I consider it a failure. I've got some experience working in countries that have been communist socialists, so I know how that system really works, and it's sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my calculation.
Well, and I think that the party also knows that. I mean, internal polling will tell you that Bernie's politics are still unpopular even within the Democratic Party. And that group that is hardcore Bernie supporters is also not a high vote percentage group of people. They're very loud on social media, but their track record for voting is not great. And, you know, as an elder millennial, which is what I am, I really don't have, I have some friends that are Bernie fans, but I do not have a lot. And so there's a pretty sharp divide, I think, between people that are somewhere in the range of 32 to 35 and the ones that are in their 20s. But there's also a pretty sharp divide about how much those people actually vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also you look at the general election and Bernie supporters are more than likely going to vote for whoever is running against Donald Trump. But those in the middle, I don't know that they're going to side with Bernie Sanders in the general election. They may side with Trump, or they may just leave that check blank and not vote for either one. So I don't know. What do you think, Tyson? Is that what's your political calculus on that race?
Yeah, I would say that it's the middle, right? That the middle is always, I think, we can hand wring and talk about sort of various minority sects and sort of different classes of voters, but it's always that middle, the independent vote, sort of that moderate middle that I don't care sort of what campaign prognosticators will go on TV every hour and talk about. At the end of the day, I think every presidential election comes down to that moderate middle. And
in New Hampshire, in Bernie Sanders' backyard, you had, if you combine the next two moderates, Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, they far outpaced Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, and President Trump got 120,000 votes, far surpassing what Ronald Reagan was able to achieve in 1984. So, you know, the enthusiasm for President Trump is not abating.
No, in fact, we'll talk about that a little more when we come back in the second half of AgriTalk. It's the Friday free-for-all, and it's the replacements today, as our usual guests on Friday free-for-all are all out traveling. So we got Tyson Redpath, Tim Brock, Michelle Jones, me, John Harris, Davis Michelson. We'll all be back right after this on AgriTalk.
Save a bundle with a bundle from John Deere. Now through March 15th, save 15% on disc harrow parts with a new Pick 3 and Save program. Saving is simple. All you have to do is pick three or more select disc harrow parts categories, purchase $150 minimum of genuine John Deere parts in each category, and receive 15% off on all parts. Visit your local John Deere dealer today. Dealer participation may vary. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends March 15th, 2020.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us is Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer. Brian, big gains in cattle today. What's going on?
Yeah, definitely, John. There's a lot of green on the screen this morning in the ag commodity markets, but cattle's definitely leading the way. Strong gains there, like I mentioned. And I don't think there's any real fundamental news behind the market. What we've seen on this big pullback here is that the funds have actively liquidated long positions. Open interest is down significantly. But yesterday we had a nice move up and we're continuing it today. So I think from just a technical perspective, cattle market likes to make these dramatic reversals. And so this is something to watch. If we can hold these gains into the close and follow through with some buying early next week, then I think the cattle market has probably put in a low at that point.
Excellent. Well, then on the grain side, on the first day of the implementation of the Phase 1 trade agreement with China, we got soybeans sort of in the green.
Yeah, they're trying. They've been trying to push to the upside. Not a whole lot of buyer interest there right now, but the good news, I guess, is that there isn't a whole lot of seller interest. And what we've seen is that the soybean market continues to work its way up off of those early February lows. And so it could be a lot worse, I guess, than what it is, even though the buyer interest is limited so far this morning.
And what about corn?
Corn market is kind of holding there, whereas soybeans have a slightly firmer tone, corn has a slightly weaker tone. And really, the wheat market, it's doing the heaviest of the lifting so far this morning. It's showing some solid gains in the winter wheat markets, but even that market's relatively quiet here to finish up the week.
All right. Thanks, Brian. That's Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Nobody but you and me.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
And now producer Joe's in a little more of a Valentine's Day mood.
He's got it now. He's in the swing of it now.
So there, if you need to send a little message to your special somebody today, there's a little Barry White for you. All right. That's Friday Free-for-All. I'm John Harith in for Chip Flory, who is out at a speaking engagement today, along with Davis Michelson, our designated survivor of the group today.
Heck yeah.
All right. We're chatting with Tyson Redpath of the Russell Group, Tim Burak from Iowa, Michelle Jones from Montana. And folks, when we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about this strong
farmer approval for President Trump. And as luck would have it, we have our monthly presidential approval pulse poll out in the field right now, and I'm pulling up the data, and it looks identical to last month. 83% combined approval for the president, 62% strongly approved, 21% somewhat approve. So as you pointed out, Tim and Tyson, that he's got a pretty strong lock on the rural vote support going into this election year.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it always comes down, as James Carville famously pointed out, to the economy. And you have an economy that even the latest jobs numbers out last week show no stop in sight, or at least cooling off. It just looks like that both the jobs numbers and economic growth continue to expand, contrary to the rest of the world. So, you know, we tend to sort of single out various feelings and sentiments of voters based on where we live or what we do. But at the end of the day, you know, I think a robust economic strength sort of, surpasses everything when it comes to what people think most about when they're deciding who they're going to vote for.
Well, and we touched on this earlier, that this could, the struggles of phase one with China could play into that come into November. Of course, the antidote to that we've seen the last 2 years is the market facilitation program. Michelle, are you hearing much in your part of the country out in Montana about a need for MFP 3.0?
You know, I don't think we've gotten much to into the discussion for a need for MFP 3.0. I'm sure it will come up down the road. I think people are still trying to put together their operating budgets, and this is really renewal season for Montana. A lot of those are going through. There is a lot of people that are struggling, and I think a lot of people up in the northern part of the state where they were really affected by the rain during harvest and had just a terrible harvest season, they really have their eyes on getting WIP Plus out, the amendments to that allows for excessive moisture and some quality loss coverage. And as far as I know, that's still being worked on by the USDA. So I think there's a lot of focus on that. And then in the next couple of months, certainly it'll turn to MFP 3.0.
Yeah, of course, one of the challenges with WIP Plus, in addition to the program changes that you talked about, there's also limited funding there. And so every time you add more acres to that program, you're diluting what's available to each producer.
Oh, yeah, there's not going to be nearly enough to cover the losses between, you know, every other part of the country and ourselves, North Dakota, because there's been a lot of focus on North Dakota's corn crop that didn't get harvest, which is obviously devastating. And there's probably 50% of Montana's durum didn't get harvested, and what did is terrible quality, and same with a lot of our spring wheat. And so it's been a really tough couple of years for our Northeast and North Central Northeast and North Central farmers, and so they're struggling financially, obviously.
Tim, what about in Iowa? Are you hearing much talk about MFP 3 at this point?
There's not a lot of talk about it right now, you know, and I really just going to echo what Michelle said. But the phase one deal has got to kick in, or the talk is really going to ratchet up. The MFP 2 payments are what kept a lot of people going to get to this point in time. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people betting on the come with phase one. And I'm just afraid there's going to be great disappointment before this year is out. And I want to be so wrong. I just want to be so wrong.
All right. So, Tyson, what's the political reality for a third year of market facilitation program payments?
Well, I think it is going to be wait and see. You know, the department now has refined this process. So, what I mean to say by that is, if MFP payments are determined to sort of be the right policy and, frankly, more politically smart decision they make, they can hit that trigger, and those payments can go out even within 7 to 10 days. So I think they will sort of evaluate what happens after, prayerfully, hopefully, coronavirus passes. Once we get into sort of busier buying seasons historically in the spring, summer, and fall, And then with the November 3rd election, certainly factoring into that, we'll just have to see. Absolutely, those payments were a critical piece to net income. And without them, no doubt rural America would be in a much more difficult and dire strait than we find it right now.
If they do a third year, will there be any more tweaking of the formula like they did between one and two? Or do you think they've settled in now on a formula that they think works as effectively as they can make it?
Well, I do think they've settled in. I think, MFP 1 was sort of hastily arranged. I think they would acknowledge that. And so I think it is more settled now. Of course, I think there will always be those who would talk to the department about payment rates and how and what those rates look like and the payments that were received. But I think it's well established at this point.
All right. Well, let's turn to other topics. And I think everybody, now that we've gotten past the first primaries, we've gotten past the impeachment trial, there's a general sense of, okay, let's move on and start getting things done, essentially. And I know, Michelle, on top of your list is infrastructure. What are you looking to see out in Montana and specifically out in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, I mean, we certainly want to see an infrastructure bill passed. I mean, it's critical for rural America to make sure that we get everything from A to B. But there's also been a lot of focus in the Pacific Northwest on the dams, which is separate from an infrastructure bill. But over in Oregon and Washington, they're doing studies and looking at taking out dams out of the Columbia and the Snake River. And that would be devastating for how we transport agriculture products, how they irrigate out of those rivers. And so there's been a lot of focus on that from our partners over in the Pacific Northwest and the Grain Growers Association, as well as the National Association, because that's a major shipping lane for us out of this area. So ensuring that those dams don't come down and that we find a way to make the fish habitat as good as it can possibly be, to make that population as healthy as it can possibly be, while we're also still able to utilize those rivers to transport as a major shipping lane, is important.
All right, Tim, what about, I know you've been involved in the Mississippi River projects there. You got a bit of a win last week with some funding being assigned to some of the lower Mississippi projects. What else are you looking at?
Well, I think that the push will come when you look at the commodity organizations, that they're going to continue to talk about lock enhancement on the upper Mississippi River, getting to the 1,200-foot locks and the five lower ones. They're going to talk about deepening the port, making it easier for the larger vessels to get in. And, there's a little money that just is now they're going to dredge an additional 5 feet out up to Baton Rouge on the Mississippi, which is all good. But the key and the argument is that there's a lot of money being spent on infrastructure in Brazil. We've sat back for the last 75 years and enjoyed the luxury that our forefathers had the vision in building both our rail and our road and our waterway system. And now we've just kind of idly used it, and it needs some major improvements, and that's going to be a huge part for agriculture of the infrastructure.
Well, and I got to wonder,
too.
Yeah,
I sat on a panel. Oh, sorry, Davis.
Go ahead, Michelle. No, go
ahead. I listened to a panel a couple of months ago at our Grain Growers Convention, and we had a Burlington Northern executive on, and he hammered home that point that we are at risk of, for the first time ever, losing our advantage to our competitors because we don't have as good an infrastructure if we don't start reinvesting in infrastructure. And that's also a job creator, but he really hammered on that point that they're outpacing us in investments, and they are going to be able to beat us in terms of infrastructure and then eventually efficiency.
Especially if we have another spring. Some of these spring forecast models are showing a potential repeat of what we saw in spring of 2019. I'm curious what that would do to specific projects. And I know we're talking more about the lower Mississippi here, whereas a lot of that flooding was on the Missouri River. But is there potential that some more disastrous flooding could actually kind of stymie some of the projects that are planned now?
Well, I'll jump in there, Davis, because it's not only that, but we've got damage from last year that still hasn't been repaired. And so, yeah, you're setting up for what could be another very challenging spring for those parts of the country if that weather system does set up the way they're thinking it might.
Well, and Michelle's right to bring up, you know, if we're going to continue to have these problems year after year with our river systems, we're definitely going to lose some standing as far as competitiveness with getting product to port.
Right, indeed. And when we come back, one more thing on this, but we're out of time, but I want to ask you, Tyson, when we come back, it seems like this is the perfect time to take on infrastructure because you've got a Congress that wants to project the image that it can still get something done. And you've got an election year, and there's nothing better in an election year than handing out capital projects and the money that comes with it. We'll talk about that and more when we come back to the Free for All on AgriTalk.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. ProFarmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
The education at Commodity Classic is simply unmatched in all of agriculture.
This is for learning. This is an opportunity to meet with people that you don't get to see on a daily basis. There's a lot of really big, important people who know a lot. And I think that's something that you don't get on a daily basis, and that's awesome.
See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, Texas, February 27th through 29th. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
You probably can't tell from the sound of it, but Simtrax is a different kind of dry fertilizer with new potential waiting to be harvested. Every dark compact granule is engineered to efficiently deliver slow-release bio-based nutrition that improves soil health and increases yields for a 3 to 5 times return on investment. Unleash the power of your land. Ask for Simtrax in your next blend or visit futureoffertilizer.com.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you are able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. At Private Healthcare, we provide the peace of mind you deserve. With Private Healthcare, you'll get the coverage you want and healthcare you need. If your employer doesn't supply healthcare coverage and you don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, you need to give us a call right now. Private Healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. When life comes at you unexpectedly, you need to be ready, and health insurance is your financial safety net. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call. at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910. 800-626-4910.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, annuity do's and don'ts for baby boomers and annuity rate report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
For all on AgriTalk, I'm John Harris. I'm the news director filling in for Chip for today. I was going to say he'll be back Monday, but actually, he'll be partially back Monday.
Sort of.
In a special holiday show for the President's Day. Since the markets are closed, he's going to take a little day off. We'll have a message for us.
Yes, and don't misunderstand our beloved Overlord. It's going to be a fantastic day of broadcast on Monday. You are going to want to stay glued to your radio or your preferred digital device.
You are, because you've heard us talk about the DC Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, and I'm Lisa Laca. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to give you a taste of that on Monday. Yeah. We're going to have parts of the Signal to Noise podcast along with our special guest, whose name just flew out of my head.
Oh, no.
Congressman Rick Crawford out of Arkansas.
Rick Crawford. Yeah. All right. How'd you get him?
The contacts of Jim Wiesmeyer are endless.
Man, he's got the juice.
Yeah, so we'll be talking to him a little bit later on today, so be sure to tune in Monday on President's Day to hear that conversation and much more on DC Signal to Noise as part of AgriTalk. But right now it's the free-for-all. Tim Burak from Iowa, Michelle Jones, Montana, Tyson Redpath from the Russell Group out in D.C. And Tyson, before we went to the break, I brought up the question of, is this the ideal time to try to push an infrastructure agreement, because you've got a Congress that wants to look like it can do something, and this is something that they can all say, hey, we brought money back to our districts for infrastructure projects. Does that make this the most likely bill to make it through Congress in this rancorous election year?
Well, I'm going to forecast that it will get done either this year or next year. I do think it's something that, whether it's 2020 or 2021, I think we've turned a corner on the not when or if, or not if, but when. And I do think the other factor you need to include is price of gas. I don't think there's any way we get an infrastructure bill without doing something on the federal motor fuels vehicle tax, both gas and diesel. And at least now and for the foreseeable future, gas and diesel prices are going to remain on the lower end of that price scale. So,
and usage is probably going to continue to decline too because of efficiency.
Correct. Yeah. And I mean, the last time we raised the gas tax, Home Improvement and Seinfeld were the top shows on TV. So, and we didn't index that gas tax. So, you know, I think the confluence of a bipartisan willingness to show that we can do infrastructure and combine that with the fact that a gas tax increase, I think if you cost adjust to index it and then not all at once, but phase in that tax increase over a number of years, I think that makes it favorable as well. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has come out and recommended a 25-cent gas tax increase. You know, I don't know what that full range looks like, but
does anybody,
if ever you were going to do a gas and diesel tax increase, I don't know that you could find a sort of a better price environment to do that in.
Yeah, but in an election year, is anybody really going to put forward a tax increase?
Well, and I think that's the issue, to be frank. I think, both the, you have to remember, it's the Environment and Public Works and the Transportation Infrastructure Committees that come up with the blueprint. But just like a home renovation, you got to go then talk to the lender, the financier, the bank. In this case, that's the Senate Finance Committee and the Ways and Means Committee in the House. And I'm not sold yet that either the Majority Leader Mitch McConnell or the Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley are willing to put forth a tax increase, because no way around it, it's a tax increase. And I don't know that they're going to be willing to do that in an election year. I will say the Ways and Means Chairman and the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, continue to have talks about how to finance a plan. I think there's a number of creative proposals on how to finance a plan, but I think that will be, frankly, the, call it the $600 billion question of how you finance it in an election year. That's why I said either this year or next year.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we finance like we have been doing everything else lately, just take on more debt. Well, before we run out of time, Tim Burrock, I want to bring up something that you had in your notes that you want to talk about today. And that's something I haven't even thought about or heard about in years, and that's MTBE, which is, for those that don't know, it's an additive derived from petroleum that boosts octane in gasoline that hasn't been allowed to be used in the U.S. for, what, Tim, well over a decade? So why is that on your list? Why is that on your list now?
Well, I've been sitting in some meetings and I've learned a few things. And, you know, as we've been trying to export ethanol, one of the bright spots was hopefully ethanol exports. But when you talk about Mexico, Japan, China, all of these countries already have an MTB infrastructure. Plus, they're using it as an additive, oxygenate. And they don't care about health. All they care about is price. So as we try to get more ethanol into their gasoline mix, I was really surprised that we've got a formidable situation here, because the MTB people are fighting us hard. And people in other countries don't care about air quality and their health like the United States does. And that has been a shock to me.
Yeah, I wasn't aware until you brought it up that there was still that much MTBE used, because, again, in the U.S. it was found to be a carcinogen that was leaching into groundwater, and that's why it was no longer used, which, as you point out, provided an opening for ethanol to provide that octane boost for gasoline at a cheaper price and more environmentally friendly.
66% of all the MTBE produced in the world is in China.
Wow.
Currently, the MTBE that we don't use in the United States, we export to Mexico, and they use it instead of exporting ethanol. Now, you think about that a while and what we're doing to our neighbors.
Wow, that's interesting. But again, a market opportunity for more ethanol around the world. Tim Burrock, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Michelle Jones, as always, insightful, great addition to the conversation. We'll have you back soon, okay?
Thank you.
And Tyson Redpath from the Russell Group. Thanks for the DC perspective, as always.
My pleasure. You guys need to work on your love ballads for Valentine's Day.
We'll talk to producer Joe about that. Well, it'll be better set up next year. All right, Davis Michelson.
Yeah.
You got this afternoon.
Who it's going to be a great show. I do have to do one thing.
I got to find Bubba!
Me and Todd Bubba Horowitz this afternoon.
All right.
Sounds of success vary from person to person. Success sounds like this to a Credenz soybean grower. Along with 43 new varieties this year, Credenz soybeans come with agronomic expertise from BASF. That means expert advisors who bring local insights on seed selection, management decisions, and crop protection options. Knowing the kind of success you're shooting for? That's smart. Talk to your authorized Credenz retailer or local BASF seed advisor. Always read and follow label directions.
It doesn't matter what you grow or how many acres you farm, Commodity Classic will help you become an even better farmer.
You don't have to be a big farmer to come here. You know, I could tell you a 1,000, 1,500 acre grower or a 500 acre grower is going to value these things, and he's going to do a lot better job when he leaves here. You know, it's going to make him more conscious of what's going on his farm than ever before.
Commodity Classic, February 27th through 29th in San Antonio. Visit CommodityClassic.com.
Thanks to AgriEdge for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer or Syngenta representative to connect with an AgriEdge specialist in your area.